Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 221 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today, because the Spurs screwed up our plans, we are only going to give you an Eastern Conference second-round preview. We're also going to talk a little bit about Spurs-Nuggets Game 7 and whether it's time to worry about the Warriors a little bit. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. Is this really episode 221?
Yeah.
Allegedly. Then, you know what? The next episode, I insist, is going to be 221B.
Why?
Sherlock Holmes, man.
Oh.
221B Baker Street. Come on. Okay. Get into your nerdgasms here. Come on.
It's been a long week with the NFL draft. My brain is half
functioning. Oh, you're right covering now. It?
Yeah. And it's in Nashville, so I was going to go downtown to it last night, but then it started pouring. God was very wise, because going down there would have been an absolute, like, if you've ever been in Nashville, it's being hosted on Lower Broadway, which is just hell on earth, like, on any given weekend. But then, with, like, thousands of people on the streets, it would have been an absolute cluster F. So I'm grateful that the rain deterred me from going down there. But yeah, it's been an excessively long week of reading mock draft after mock draft after mock draft. So I'm excited to talk about some basketball.
People are still into the NFL? Really?
Yeah. I know.
Wow.
Even though it was like such a perfect start to the NFL draft, because an hour beforehand, a tape leaked about one player's girlfriend discussing how he beat their 3-year-old child. It was like, oh, this is a perfect lead-in. No. Yeah, it was good. Well, welcome to the NFL.
The NFL is the worst league. Oh my
God. Yeah. It's not, right. Not great. So not only did Spurs Nuggets go to Game 7, but the Clippers are frisky and pushed that series to Game 6. So we cannot give you the Western Conference second round preview that we were hoping to give today. We will assume the Warriors will close out, but we have no idea what's going to happen in Spurs Nuggets Game 7. So we'll get to all of that later. But we'll start with the Eastern Conference, because all of their teams handled business as they should. Going into the playoffs, it was very clear there were 4 top teams: Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, Philly. The Raptors and Sixers each dropped their opening game, but it was 16-0 after that. So now we have the second round that we were hoping for when the playoff bracket came out. We saw this titanic clash forthcoming, in which all 4 of these teams have major questions in terms of their long-term future. All of them have major free agents this summer, and what happens over the next couple weeks could go a long way toward determining not only what happens with these franchises, but really like the title picture across the league moving forward. So with the stakes set, let's start with Sixers-Raptors, because that series tips off Saturday night. It got bumped to 7:30 thanks to Spurs Nuggets, which I'm actually really appreciative of, because I have midnight plans on Saturday, and I would not have been able to watch the end of the game. So shout out to the Spurs for
midnight plans on Saturday. Is Avengers?
No, it's my wife is Orthodox Christian, so it's we have Easter this week instead of last week, and we have a midnight church service to go to. So
Oh, you just told me because you told me earlier that you were going to see Adventure Son.
Yeah. Saturday. I'm doing that during the day. And then I'm going to go home and sleep.
By the way, yeah, you can look forward to it.
Okay. That's all I want to hear. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Let's do so. Raptors, Sixers. There are a lot of matchup issues when I'm looking at this series for the Sixers. Mm-hmm. Number one, Kawhi Leonard absolutely owns Ben Simmons. Like, Simmons in four games against the Raptors this year had 25 turnovers. One of those games, Kawhi didn't play. So remove that game, and he had 24 turnovers in the three games Kawhi did play. Turnovers have plagued the Sixers team all year, but that's a huge issue. If the Raptors have Kawhi on Simmons, which I'm fully expecting them to do, the Sixers have to figure out either how to get him going or how to get the offense going without him. So what do you think they do, Mort?
No, it's a good question. I think the ball should go into the hands of Jimmy Butler more. Mm-hmm. And that's also why I don't think Kawhi will spend as much time on Ben Simmons as we are maybe initially believing he is. I think it would make more sense just sticking Kawhi on Jimmy and removing that playmaking advantage that Philly would have in that. Obviously, we're sitting here talking about Kawhi being on a player, but in today's NBA, like, everyone is switching around and one player is guarding, like, four different people a game.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would definitely prioritize Kawhi on Jimmy as opposed to Ben, at least initially, because I think the playmaking ability of Jimmy is what the Raptors should fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the playoffs, we've seen it time and time again in the playoffs. If you can't make shots from the perimeter, you are going to be somewhat limited. So I think there is a scenario wherein Ben kind of can take himself out of the ball game just by not being able to make shots,
mm-hmm.
which means the offense has to find some level of competency through Jimmy and preferably Embiid, but he's matched up against Gasol, who's a behemoth of a human being.
Yeah.
So it just seems to me that Jimmy's going to be the guy that you're going to look for to make plays time and time again throughout this series, which means, you know, that Kawhi needs to shut that down, and he can.
Yeah, see, I think Kawhi starts on Simmons because of the... I mean, ideally, when the Sixers' offense is flowing as best it can, Simmons is the one orchestrating it. So I think, you know, that's... You stop him and then force them into alternate actions, and I agree. It's the Sixers' natural counter is, okay, we're going to have Simmons operate more off the ball as a screener and a rim runner. We'll make Jimmy and Tobias even... they can create in isolation. They can create in pick and rolls. The problem is the Raptors also have a bunch of other good defenders in Pascal Siakam and Danny Green.
Yep.
So the way I'm envisioning it is it's going to be Kawhi on Simmons, Siakam on Harris, Danny Green on Butler. But then that leaves the question for the Raptors. The one vulnerability I see in their starting five defensively is Kyle Lowry is 6'1", the shortest person in the starting lineup for the Sixers.
Oh, you're 6'6". Being so kind.
Yeah,
you're
being so. He's listed as 6'1", I should say.
He's actually listed at 6 feet nothing.
Oh, is he? Good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So he's giving up half a foot to anyone in the Sixers starting lineup.
Right.
Where do you put him if you're the Raptors? Where do you put him on D?
Well, if you had DeLon Wright still, you probably put him on the bench. No. I don't know what you do with him, honestly. I think maybe you just put him on Ben, really. I wouldn't even mind because, yeah, then Ben would go into the post and try to take him near the rim,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, fine. I think the Raptors would live with that because Kyle is still, like, let's be honest about Kyle here for a second. He's still strong as hell. Like, he's a frisky, small guard who is very beefy, very, very strong, doesn't really back down a whole lot, doesn't concede ground, I should say. So I wouldn't have any trouble starting him on Simmons and see how it rolls out. But preferably the way I see it is because Danny Green is a wing and Tobias Harris is, you know, a smaller four, I wouldn't be surprised to see Danny on Tobias a lot.
Mm.
And then have Kawhi spend a lot of time on Jimmy. And then if Kyle was on Ben, then Gasol obviously would be on Embiid.
And Siakam on Redick?
Yeah. I was actually thinking that you could get away with it. Or maybe you actually switch it around and you go Kyle on Redick and Siakam on Ben.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Maybe they do try to put Kyle on Ben and goad him into... I mean, Ben's so big that you don't want to give him those passing windows. I think that's tricky, but if you can goad him into... Like, he is pretty good in the post.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, an inefficient shot in general. You'd much rather Ben Simmons be taking hook shots than J.J. Redick or Tobias Harris coming open off the screens and hitting threes. Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, because if you put Kyle, like, theoretically, Kyle on J.J., just because that's the least size disadvantage, but I don't know that you want Kyle running through all the screens that J.J.'s going through. And you're going to sap his energy on defense and then make him less effective on offense, so... I mean, in general, I think the Raptors match up better with the Sixers than the Sixers do the Raptors. But yes. That said, I think that's the one area that they can and should look to exploit. And then, yeah, I mean, the Kawhi thing, I remember Matt Moore a couple of years ago for CBS Sports did that whole piece on, like, how teams were trying to neutralize Kawhi on defense. And, like, whenever Kawhi was on a three-point shooter, they would just hide that guy in the corner and just... keep Kawhi glued to him and then run offense on the other half of the court. Like, they were just, like, playing keep away from Kawhi. So it wouldn't totally shock me if the Sixers try to do that strategy too.
But that doesn't work, though, when you think about it. Because that would work in San Antonio because they didn't have multiple defenders to the same extent. I know Danny Green was there and he came over.
Yeah.
But, like, there wasn't a Pascal Siakam.
Right.
There wasn't a Marcus Gasol controlling the paint. Like, there's... This team is just so much better suited to actually help Kawhi defensively, I feel.
Yeah. And before we get, we'll hit Embiid Gasol in a second, but I should note that I have a preview going up later today about this whole series. We'll go into all this stuff too and have some pretty numbers, all that good stuff, at the Basketball Writers. So, Mort, are you tired of clickbait, ads, pop-up videos, talking head hyperbole, big market bias, and data selling? Are you tired of soap operas, wild speculation, and unnamed sources? Tired of padding the stats of CEOs and shareholders while your favorite content creators get paid pennies for their work? At bballwriters.com, they are too. That's why they created the Basketball Writers. At bballwriters.com, they concentrate on just the game and everything they love about it. The NBA, WNBA, EuroLeague, fantasy basketball, the draft, and many more corners of the hoops universe they're soon to explore. All in one place on a blazingly fast, clean site that lets you choose which writer to directly support while still enjoying all the content from their whole team. Elevate the conversation, elevate the game. They'll see you at bballwriters.com, and don't forget to enter the code THENBAPOD for 10% off your annual, monthly, or daily subscription. So enter THENBAPOD, and you can check out my full Raptors-Sixers preview there. We also have some good stuff. I know a Celtics-Bucks preview just went up. I'm sure we'll have the West once those teams actually take care of business. Knock on wood. But yeah, Mort, let's go into Gasol and Embiid, because I think this is the trade deadline move that may end up having possibly the biggest impact of any in terms of the Eastern Conference playoff race. Just because Embiid struggled against Gasol before. When Gasol was in Memphis, Embiid did not shoot all that well. I think he averaged like 14 or 15 points a game on a low percentage from the field. This is one of the few guys, along with Al Horford, who can legit match up with Embiid one-on-one. And, you know, like, Embiid in the first round, the Nets had no answer for him. Right. And he figured it out pretty quickly. He was on a bad knee, and he still put up, like, you know, a 31-16, 7-6 game against them. He's not going to have easy sledding this series.
I would agree. And that's, honestly, still, even so, just going back to complete the, you know, the thought process with Ben in connection with Embiid as well. Like, if you force Ben to take post-ups, that actually leaves out a Embiid post-up, which I think Toronto would prefer. But as we're going to talk about right now, with Embiid and Gasol, like, maybe it ends up being a situation where the Raptors would actually want Embiid to kind of demand post touches because Gasol is so effective defending the rim and because he's like 7'1" to 270. I don't even know, like, his weight is definitely around there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from a physicality standpoint, he can match Embiid strength-wise and size-wise. Like, he's not going to finish over Gasol easy. Like, this is not going to be like a Jared Allen pogo stick that he can just break in half.
Right.
So I'm not sure what their plan of attack really is, because it seems like if you're going into the post against Toronto, there are so many capable players that can make that into a difficult shot.
Mm-hmm.
Embiid is a pretty good passer in his own right.
Yeah.
It gets overshadowed a lot because of Ben Simmons' presence, but Embiid is a good passer, so maybe you actually use him as sort of a passing hub from the post, mm-hmm. where he'll recognize patterns, see if you get a some sort of down screen for JJ who can pop out. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
That would maybe make sense, just using Embiid as a type of playmaker from the post and onwards. Not saying that he shouldn't take shots, obviously, but I think that would be a fine secondary option.
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten especially good at passing out of double teams. The problem is the Raptors, I don't think, are going to have to double team him as much as most other teams do. So agreed. Therein lies the trouble with this matchup for Embiid. Like, he has to dominate this matchup for them to win this series, but it's going to be really hard for him to do so. And it's one thing is he can't get goaded into taking like a bunch of threes. He's still got to go low, try to get Gasol in foul trouble, ideally, because they don't really have... Serge Ibaka is not going to be able to defend him like Mark right. Gasol will. So I think that's the play if you're Embiid, is still trust your post moves and really just try to take it to him. And, hope you can goad him into dumb fouls or even dumber ejections, because that's been the strategy for the last couple months for Embiid.
I think it's possible. I wonder, though, just because of the size advantage, I think, and like you just mentioned, the Gasol would probably try to goad Embiid into taking threes.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, yeah. Gasol is not great at defending the perimeter a lot,
mm-hmm.
so he would definitely prefer that. But at the same time, again, just because of that, the big size advantage that Gasol has, not over Embiid, but against other NBA competition that Embiid normally faces, like Jared Allen, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wouldn't you rather have Embiid just spend a ton of energy early on? Like, even if he scores 10 points in the first quarter through a wide variety of jump hooks and post moves and whatnot, wouldn't you rather just want him to tire the hell out and just spend up energy early on so he won't be as efficient for the rest of the game? Like, even if you're Toronto?
Yeah, I mean, one of the tricky things for this matchup is... both Gasol and Ibaka are legit three-point shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Nets, the Sixers were playing drop coverage because the Nets didn't have a stretch five, but that's... I don't know if that's going to work against the Raptors. Like, maybe they try it at first, and then they say, like, look, Gasol or Ibaka is going to have to hit some open threes against us, or we're just going to continue doing this. But that's the concern, especially for the backups. Like, Boban was surprisingly effective in the first round because, again, the Nets didn't have anyone who can punish him on open threes. But Boban against Ibaka, I'm worried that Boban's going to get played right off the floor in this matchup.
Yeah, Ibaka's just both too quick. Like, he can drive by him. He can pull mm-hmm. up a three. He's just so multifaceted.
Yeah.
And him coming off the bench has kind of unleashed him, I feel.
Yeah.
But and that's the crux of the issue. Like, you mentioned Kyle Lowry about 10 minutes ago when you said you didn't know if you wanted to see Kyle just run through a screen chasing Redick. But then look at Toronto's bench.
Yeah.
They have more depth than Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So you can effectively have the first unit just go balls out in the first quarter, then have a competent second unit come in, providing the first unit with at least half a quarter of rest, and then bring them back in. Like, Philly will have to just... this is a puzzle for them. They have to stagger minutes the right way because there isn't, like, a five-man unit just coming in off the bench there. They have to have, like, at least two starters on the floor for 48 minutes.
Yeah. And another problem is Mike Scott is dealing with plantar fasciitis and a right heel issue. Brett Brown said he's not game planning with the idea that Mike Scott will be available in game one. Which means the Sixers bench is basically down to Boban and James Ennis. Maybe TJ McConnell gets dusted off because Fred VanVleet is likewise a smaller guard. So TJ gave up a lot of size to the Nets guys, Dinwiddie, LeVert, D'Angelo Russell, and didn't really play except for in garbage time after game one. But without Scott, like, that that was their option for the small ball five, is putting Scott or Simmons there. If Scott's not available, Jonah Bolden, you know, is just too young and raw still. Yeah, the bench is a big advantage for Toronto.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The last point for Philly is, you know, I'm assuming Jimmy's going to be on Kawhi. I'm assuming Ben's going to be on Lowry, at least to start defensively, which theoretically means Tobias Harris guarding Pascal Siakam, which does not seem like it's going to work all that well.
I would agree with that.
But I'm wondering if maybe that's this, like, for both of these teams, I think it boils down to this is a pick your poison series. Like, both teams have too much talent. You're not going to stop everything. So you need to figure out what are you okay giving up. Right. So for the Sixers, if you could stop Lowry, if you could stop, or not stop, but if you could slow down Lowry, slow down Kawhi, slow down Marc Gasol, are you okay saying Pascal's going to drop 30 on us, but if we can at least force the other guys to have tough shots, we can live with that?
I mean, that's the game plan you know, everyone brings up when you have, like, a star team, right? When you have a full roster. Like, if you can minimize the effect of player X, Y, and Z, doesn't matter if this guy pops out of nowhere and drops 30. It's always a problem because Siakam is efficient. He'll drop 30 efficient point.
Yeah.
That's really the crux of the issue here is it's fine if you have an Allen Iverson type who'll go off for 30 but take 29 shots doing it. Siakam's not that type of guy. Like, he'll get to the line, he'll hit threes, he'll finish around the paint, he'll hit mid-rangers. Like, and he does so efficiently because he selects his shots. Like, even if you put him in a position where he has to score, he's not going to shoot relentlessly without any sort of mind or matter with it. Like, he'll take smart shots, he'll make the appropriate plays. So he's probably the one guy I wouldn't give too much freedom. If anything, I would even have the rest of the team just kind of amp up the shot attempts. If I can take Pascal Siakam out of the game, that's what I do.
Yeah.
He's a ball handler. He's a multifaceted defender. He's a rebounder. He's a, you know, he's a shooter. He's a slasher. He can play make from the 3-point line, from the elbow, from the post, wherever he is on the court, he can play make. And, like, he is the second most crucial element to this series after Kawhi.
Yeah.
Like, that's the guy I would try to limit.
I think what happens is Simmons starts on Lowry, Tobias starts on Pascal, Tobias gets cooked, and Simmons moves to Pascal. Because I think you, especially given Lowry's reputation in the playoffs, whether it's fair or unfair, I think you could probably live with him going off more than you could Kawhi or Pascal.
It's fair at this point, isn't it?
Yeah.
I get that it's not, it feels icky just kind of, you know, criticizing Kyle, but
yeah,
he hasn't really shown he can string together like a full full playoffs really with superior play. I think it's okay to say that that element plays a factor going into this series as well.
Yeah.
I do wonder though, if you're Philly, how confident do you feel about Ben on Pascal Siakam though?
I wouldn't be, I mean, I feel better about him than I do Tobias. Like, Ben's a good defender.
Yeah.
And Ben was real locked in against D'Angelo in the first round. He's got the size to match up. I mean, again, you're not going to stop any of these guys, but I think Ben at least has a better chance of slowing down Pascal than I think Tobias will get absolutely roasted.
I think the question rather is, like, I think you're right that Ben would slow down Pascal Siakam's scoring, mm-hmm. but how does he defend, like, all the playmaking, all the intangibles, like, just the smart plays? Can he do that? Can he really disrupt Siakam to the extent that he is, you know, lowered in terms of his effectivity?
I think he could. I mean, Ben was, I think he's leading the, or either tied or leading with Damian Lillard in terms of deflections per game in the first round. I mean, he is, Ben's a smart defender. Yeah, I don't think mm-hmm. he gets enough credit for that. And Brett Brown said as much. You know, he was like, look, you can focus on the offense all you want, but this kid's like a 6'10 versatile defender who can, you know, he was on a point guard last round, and now we're talking about him defending a power forward. Like, he's
right.
He's very good on that end of the floor. So I think that's why you at least have to, like, he and Jimmy are the two good wing defenders, and then Tobias is meh, and Redick is a giant red flag.
Right.
So, yeah.
And Embiid is the anchor, obviously, right. But he's hobbled a little bit on the leg, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what's your prediction for this series?
I mean, I think it can go either way, and I'm not just saying that as a cop-out. I genuinely feel that this series can swing.
Yeah.
But if I'm looking at it, if I'm being honest with myself, I'm leaning Toronto. Mm-hmm. I really am. And the crazy thing about this series is nothing would surprise me.
Yeah.
Like, both teams could sweep, and it could go seven. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing would surprise me here, because it's all about the matchup. And the matchup in the regular season, in my opinion, just does not apply in a playoff context, because you have so much more time to prepare, and, like, everything goes into it. Like, emotions are running high, everything is more intense. I just usually throw the regular season out. I don't think it matters as much as people make it out to do. But when it comes down to it, Toronto has Kawhi. Mm-hmm. Kawhi is so good that we don't talk about him enough. He's a pick and roll guy. He's also a screen. Like, he can do both. He's a rebounder. He's one of the league's best defenders, like a top three defender at the very least. He can score from the post. He can get to the free throw line. He is superbly efficient. Doesn't really turn the ball over a lot. Everything he does is calculated in the best degree possible. And with the Sixers, who are still gelling, like, let's be fair, they are still gelling, mm-hmm. and they will have to throw, like, a bunch of different defenders on him. And from what we've seen from Kawhi all year long, and frankly throughout the course of his career, is that doesn't bother him. Throwing three or four different people at him, he seems unfazed by it. This dude is just wired differently. Mm-hmm. And in a playoff context, I would dread him a lot. Combine that with the fact that you have a guy in Pascal Siakam who is as unselfish as they come, who's a genuinely just terrific playmaker from the four, who has the ability now to stretch the court, and you have Gasol who can, I don't want to say stop Embiid because he can't, but he can at least make life hard on Embiid. I don't know, I just don't like that problem.
Mm-hmm. So you're taking the Raptors how many games?
I want to give Philly some level of credit here, and I think they will take a couple games. I'm saying 6 or 7 with okay. Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to your point about the regular season, all four of their games came before the trade deadline. So Tobias Harris has not played in any of the games against Toronto this year. Marcus All has not played against the games or against Philly as a Raptor. Fun fact, Markel Fultz started the first game in the regular season between these two teams. Mike Muscala started the final two. And my favorite part, Greg Monroe, who is now a Sixer, started for the Raptors in one of the regular season games. So just throw the results out the window. But I think you can glean at least individual matchups. Like, the Ben Kawhi thing came from the regular season, and I think that is a legit concern that you can pull from that tape.
That's fair. Yep.
And then, like, same thing with, I know Gasol has not played Embiid as a Raptor, but Gasol has played against Embiid, so we've seen the matchup trouble he gives. So I'm with you. I wish I could, you know, in my heart of hearts, I would love to pick the Sixers in the series. And if we see the Sixers that showed up in Game 5, if they show up throughout this entire series, then they do have a chance. If they figure out some of these matchup issues, if Embiid's knee is feeling a little better after a couple days of rest, maybe they can do it. I'm just not super confident. I feel like this is the series where Kawhi reminds us why he was, you know, right in the thick of that MVP race a couple of years ago. Yeah. You know, like they blasted the Magic. Who gives a crap? Of course they were going to blast the Magic. This is a really, you know, they're going against four all-star caliber players in Jimmy, Tobias, Ben, and Embiid. I think Kawhi is going to be the best player on the floor in this series, so I'm also going Raptors in six.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. I think what swings the series, if that's possible, is Jimmy.
Yeah.
Jimmy is the big X factor for Philly.
For sure.
Because if he goes into... What did he have in game one
36?
Against Brooklyn? He has 36, right?
So, yeah.
And he didn't force the issue unless it was needed. Like, he took his time. He understood time and score. He was just brilliant. I know Brooklyn won, but that sense, that dagger that he has in him, that ability to just turn it on and off, that's crucial for Philly. In this series, he has to be on at all times.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no going back there. He has to be aggressive from the start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, he has to battle Kawhi to a standstill, basically.
Yeah.
Which is going to be really, really hard. But if he does that, he's going to earn, you know, there's still a lot of concern in Philly about giving him a long-term max deal. If he battles Kawhi to a standstill and helps Philly win this series, he deserves every single penny he's going to get this summer.
I will say this. Jimmy, over the last couple of years, has been the player, at least from what I've seen, who guards James Harden the best.
Yeah.
And James Harden has way more tricks up his sleeve than Kawhi does. Kawhi is a little bit more simplistic. Mm-hmm. He's just... but it's for some reason, like, you just can't stop it. You know what's coming with Kawhi. Like, you know his very limited moves package, and you still can't stop it, which is very intriguing to see how that plays out. But, yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy strikes me as the type who gets, like, really fired up for going against a guy, an all-NBA caliber guy like Kawhi. So I think this is going to bring out I hope it's going to bring out the best in Jimmy, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense instead of, hey, stop Caris LeVert or D'Angelo Russell.
Right, who are both good players. No offense to them. Like, D'Angelo is an all-star. Caris is going to be an all-star, but there's a difference between two young guys who you expect to beat and Kawhi Leonard, right, who, like, you know, arguably could have been the MVP 2 years ago.
Okay, then say DeMar Carroll instead.
There we go.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah.
All right. Let's flip to Milwaukee-Boston because, again, stakes are super high here. Milwaukee, all of their top guys except for Giannis and now Eric Bledsoe are free agents. Boston, obviously, Kyrie Irving is a free agent. Al Horford could opt out and become a free agent. So a lot riding on this series as well. I think the big question for Boston, aside from, you know, they beat Indiana, like, their chemistry looks fine right now, but so, like, chemistry is still lingering just because of the 82 game season that they had. But the big question is, how do you stop Giannis?
Well, I mean, you don't. They don't have the personnel.
Right.
Look, I've seen a lot of Celtics fans argue about Marcus Morris, and I get it. Like, size wise, he's big. Like, he can be physical.
Uh-huh.
I get the logic that they're trying to extract from that idea. But it's just not a reality. Like, Marcus Morris is not going to be a Giannis Antetokounmpo stopper.
No.
Like, let's be real. Like,
no.
That's ludicrous. And, you know, Al Horford I've seen proposed, but, like, Giannis will take one big step around Al and be at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think the quickness will help him whatsoever. Jaylen Brown, too small. Like, he's just flat out too small. And Jason Tatum just doesn't have the defensive prowess yet.
Yeah.
Like, he's not even near being ready for that. Gordon Hayward, let's be honest, like, no. Just no. He's still coming back from that awful ankle injury, and he's looked a lot better the past 2 or 3 months, I want to say.
Yeah.
And athletically, he's looking to be better, but even prime, healthy Gordon Hayward will have trouble with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, it's not...
for sure.
Yeah, so... So that's your answer. You don't stop Giannis. You figure out a way to stop everyone else. And we just talked about this for the Philly-Toronto series. Like, you can't really go into a series with the mindset of, hey, let's stop everyone else, because that's just not the way it works.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you right off the bat. I have a very hard time seeing how Boston can, you know, bring out an effective defense against the Bucks. Mm-hmm. Because you have a ton of shooters and Giannis. So you're effectively creating Giannis all the space that he needs to drive, and there is no one there to stop him from just ending every possession in a dunk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see what they do.
So I'm going to follow with a question here, but, or I guess two questions, really. One, what they could do is what Philly did and say, Giannis can go for 45 or 50, but we're going to stay glued to all your other shooters. He wants to create. Like, he's inclined to get his teammates involved, not to the extent that a LeBron James is, or like a Steve Nash back in the day. But, you know, like, he's willing to drop 45 or 50 if that's what you're giving up. But, like, he still does want to kick the ball out to a Chris Middleton or a Brooke Lopez. So maybe that's the play, is just say, okay, like, we're just going to really smother Middleton, Bledsoe, Lopez, those guys, and make you, if you get 50, we could still beat you that way. But they also, in Indiana, they were starting a two big lineup with Horford and Baines. They do, as you alluded to, they could put Marcus Morris back in the starting lineup. They could put Gordon Hayward back in there. What do you think they do? Do you think they change their starting lineup for game one?
Oh, yeah, there's no way they can. I mean, I get the Aaron Baines, Al Horford lineup for Indiana, but how can they justify that against Milwaukee? Giannis is playing the four.
Right.
So obviously one of those guys would have to be on Giannis,
yeah,
more than likely Horford. But like I just said, like, I love Al. Al is one of the top five smartest players in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
No question. He still, from a physical standpoint, can do nothing with Giannis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Giannis is taller, longer, significantly more athletic, and he starts his point of attack from outside the three-point line. Mm-hmm. So, or Horford would have to go all the way out there.
Right.
One giant, you know, first step from Giannis, game over.
Well, I mean, I think you sag off of Giannis. If he is open behind the three-point,
If it's Horford, even if you sag off, he'll still blow by you.
That is possible. I mean, I definitely think they don't, because not only the Giannis issue, but Brook Lopez is a stretch five now. You can't have Aaron Baines guarding him like that. So right. I definitely do think they should switch the starting lineup, and I think they will heading into game one. It wouldn't surprise me to see Marcus Morris back in there. But, yeah, I mean, like, the Giannis issue is looming very large over them in this series, obviously. On the Bucks side, how about Eric Bledsoe? Do you think he can make life difficult on Kyrie Irving?
Yeah. I think he can. He's up to it. I mean, he is one. I think we've forgotten how good defensively Eric Bledsoe can be.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about his offensive efficiency a lot this year, and to be frank, like, he hasn't had to play, all league defense throughout the course of this entire season, because the Bucks were just like, they were a well-oiled machine. Like, he didn't have to go, balls to the wall every single possession defensively.
Mm-hmm.
In the playoffs here, now that they're up against a real test. Yeah, I think he can. I think he can turn that engine on. And on the other end, like, I'm kind of worried about Kyrie. Kyrie defending Bledsoe?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. I think Bledsoe can eat his lunch.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. This series is very similar to Toronto-Philly in the sense that, like, both teams present some tough matchup problems for the other one. Giannis, obviously, for the Bucks, but if Bledsoe could play Kyrie to a standstill, that's a huge win for the Bucks, and I think
mm-hmm.
there's at least a chance that happens. Another issue for them is, Milwaukee all year has been playing this drop coverage with Brook Lopez trying to goad. Yeah, okay, all these centers could hit threes. Like, yeah, sure, you shoot 28% from three-point range, go right ahead.
Right.
Al Horford's a good three-point shooter.
Yep.
So is that drop coverage going to work against the Celtics, or are they going to have to change their defensive scheme on the fly here?
I wouldn't mind seeing Horford take a lot of shots because he's not a high-volume shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes unnatural for a player who is used to taking around 10 shots a game to suddenly take 17 or 18.
Mm.
I wouldn't have a problem with it initially. Like, yeah, he may actually punish you in the first or second quarter. That's fine. You kind of live with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Horford is the one taking shots, then that means that's a drive that Kyrie Irving is not going to take, where he potentially draws fouls, gets to the line,
mm-hmm.
and puts you in the bonus quickly, or puts them in the bonus quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Open shots? Yeah. I mean, why not? It's fine. Just protect the rim. Make sure that you don't get in foul trouble. I'll live with it if I'm Milwaukee. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they changed their scheme heading into game one, just because it's gotten them so far. It's gotten them to where they are. They were, I think, they led the league in defensive rating this year. You know, they obviously did not play Boston all 82 games, but I think you stick with what got you there until Boston, until the team you're playing punishes you for it. And then once that happens, then you can reevaluate. I think the Pistons, unfortunately, were not a good warm-up for this team because Andre Drummond is very much not that type of player. So they
have... Oh, you didn't like the step-back three-pointer he attempted?
Milwaukee did. Yep. But, you know, this is a very different team stylistically. So you have to basically throw out what happened. Like, Milwaukee is not going to blow this Celtics team out by 20-plus points every night. I don't think. It's not going to be as easy as their route of the Pistons.
Agreed. But there is a world wherein they do take the upper hand very early on and just never let up.
Yeah, it's very possible. And that goes back to what I was alluding to earlier with the chemistry stuff. Like, yeah, the Celtics beat... they swept the Pacers, which is great. But the Pacers aren't the Bucks. Like, the Pacers have a bunch of role players without a star with Oladipo mm-hmm. hurt. The Bucks have a bunch of role players plus some... I mean, I would say Chris Middleton is better than anyone on the Pacers roster aside from Oladipo.
I think that is very fair.
And I think Eric Bledsoe, frankly, is better at creating his own offense than anyone on the Pacers roster other than Oladipo.
I actually think he's better than everyone on the roster not named Oladipo as well.
Yeah, so, like, for Boston, this is also... I know, like, yeah, the Pacers had a really good defense. They were third in the league during the regular season, but the Bucks were even better defensively, and they have many more offensive weapons than the Oladipo-less Pacers did. So, I know Boston fans are, like, suddenly feeling great, like, oh, yeah, we're going to make the finals now. Everything's better because we swept the Pacers, but... The Bucks are a much, much, much more difficult challenge.
How do you like Jason Tatum, by the way, in this series?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... Because I think Middleton's going to be on him, right?
Mm-hmm. I think you and I are going the same place.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Middleton... These two teams played each other last year in the first round, and Middleton shot like 60% from three or some nonsense, right?
No, yeah, he was extremely efficient against the Celtics. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that was his back to... I mean, because he had the hamstring issue the year before, if I'm remembering correctly, and was, like, out for most of the year. And then, like, that was his breakout party back into, like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm really great still.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this is going to be... Like, I know this is... Boston fans probably feel good about this because you beat them last year in the first round without Kyrie, without Gordon Hayward. Now you've got your talent back. But also, last year's Bucks team was coached by Joe Prunty, did not have Brook Lopez. Like, this is a very, very, very different series than what we had last year.
And Giannis is like 20% better.
That seems low.
Yeah. You're right.
Right. But yeah, I mean, Middleton did. Yeah, he shot 59.8% overall, 61% from three. 25 of 41 from three in that series. That's outrageous. And Bledsoe is better this year than he was last year, too, I think.
Yeah, his shot selection has just improved drastically.
Yeah.
I think part of this is... It really comes down also to, like, Jaylen Brown, right? Because Jaylen Brown, who's had great games shooting the ball, is still not one of those guys you can rely on to the same extent game in and game out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, if you're Brad Stevens and the Celtics, you have to actually look at him from a game-to-game basis. Like, if is he hot early on? Great, ride him. If he's not, get him the F out and get Gordon in to make some plays. So the substitution patterns have to be on point for Brad Stevens, because against Milwaukee, who has such a volatile defense and just such an effective running game, mm-hmm. you cannot afford keeping a guy in who potentially is just, you know, wreaking havoc on the other spectrum of it for your own team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like Jaylen Brown. I do. But he does have that potential, unfortunately, where if he's not hitting, he's not effective. And he takes himself out of the ball games once in a while defensively when he's not offensively engaged. Not to say that he just stops up, like he still plays hard, but he seems to like mentally lose his focus a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And the Bucks this year also have, you know, they have more forward depth than they did last year in that series. Like, last year they had to rely on Jabari Parker for 167 minutes in that series. Thon Maker played 130 minutes. Tony Snell played 134 minutes.
There you go. Yeah.
This year they have Nico. They have Ersan Ilyasova. They have DJ Wilson. He's not going to play all that much, but they have him as a break glass in case of emergency option. They have
Brockton after game two, potentially.
Yeah, right. So he and Smart are both missing at least a couple games in this series. Who do you think's the bigger absence, or whose absence will hurt his team more?
Smart.
I agree.
Yeah.
With all due respect to Brogdon. But
yeah, I think Brockton is the better player.
Yeah,
I think Smart has a bigger impact on his team,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the Bucks are just so deep.
Yeah,
I'm not overlooking that Brockton is one of the most efficient scorers in the NBA, mm-hmm. and a steady playmaker, a solid defender who's got long arms for days. Like he's incredibly long as well, and I mean he's great. And from just in isolation view, I would take Brockton over Marcus Smart every single day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But Smart's defensive know-how and aggressiveness, especially in a playoff setting,
mm-hmm.
for Boston specifically, that's there's no getting around that. That's a huge loss.
Yeah, because Smart, I think you're just going to miss that defense in particular. You could have put him, if Bledsoe is going off and Kyrie can't guard him, you could put him there. If Middleton's going off, you could put him on Middleton. Like, he's mm-hmm. their best wing defender, I think. And you just need guys, you need different looks to throw at Giannis, too. And that takes away one of, as you said, Gordon Hayward, I don't want a single possession where Gordon Hayward is guarding Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Right.
So they've got Brown, Tatum, and Morris. But Smart would have been a nice fourth option. I guess Horford too in there, but yeah, I mean, I definitely think Smart's the bigger absence in the series. I also think, you know, last year we had the Scary Terry breakout playoff performance, blah blah blah. Milwaukee having George Hill in this series could be kind of big.
Oh yeah, I mean, look, Terry Rozier against George Hill, I know who I'm taking there.
Yeah.
I trust George Hill way more than I trust Rozier. Right. Rozier is, you know, he can go 11 for 19 one game and he go 1 for 7 the next night.
Yeah.
And his defense swings because he's basically playing off of energy once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a baseline on him. I don't have an understanding of where are you as a player, which is also going to hurt him a lot for free agency this summer, by the way.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, George Hill is, like, he started in San Antonio, remember?
Yeah.
Like, he's got the Pop system in him, like, the basketball know-how. He's actually one of Pop's favorite players. Mm-hmm. Like, that Pop has said repeatedly that that's the one guy he actually hated giving up. Like, where he was really, really hard on himself afterwards. Like, why did I give up George Hill? I love George Hill.
Right.
That means you have a mind for the game.
Yeah.
Terry Rozier is very much an instinct player.
Yeah.
And in a playoff setting, I would much, much rather have a guy who thinks out the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like we're leaning in the same direction for this series, but what's your prediction?
Yes. Bucks in 4 or 5.
Whoa! Wow. Okay. Maybe we're not. I think it's going to be closer. I was leaning Bucks in six.
Yeah. No, I'm not there. And I've realized that I come off as a huge Celtics hater because I actually thought that Indiana had a chance here.
Yeah.
That was dumb. And I'll definitely take ownership of that. Trust me, I'm not a Celtics hater, but I'm a major believer of this year's Bucks team.
Yeah.
I just think their entire team just runs so smoothly. Not just from an on-court perspective as well, like personalities from behind the scenes, their camaraderie, mm-hmm. the chemistry. And that's not trying to make a comment on the Kyrie stuff and the kids. Like that seems to be over with, yeah, honestly.
Right.
But I do think that the chemistry is just better in Milwaukee. Like they just seem to be on a different level mentally. Like I don't know. I'm just feeling them, really.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that's fair. Look, the Pistons were completely outmatched in that first round series anyway, especially with Blake Griffin banged up. But no team has been more impressive in the playoffs than the Milwaukee Bucks so far.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like, Portland, you could argue just because they so vastly exceeded expectations. But, like,
right. Look
at the Warriors right now. You know, they entered the postseason. They entered this season and the playoffs as the overwhelming favorite to win the title, and they're going to a game six in the first round because they lost two home games. Like, the Bucks just took care of business. They just obliterated the Pistons, and they didn't even have to work that hard to do it.
Oh, yeah, they were playing 70% that series.
Yeah, like, Giannis averaged fewer than 30 minutes a game in that series.
Remember in game one when he had like 24 points and 17 rebounds in 23 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, there isn't a single Bucks player, actually, who averaged more than 30 minutes in that series.
Yeah.
Like, they're just well-rested. They got a full week of rest. Sunday could get ugly. I think they're game one, they're going to come out and look to make a statement against Boston. I think Boston might be able to steal game two, but I think Milwaukee's just going to smack them in game one.
Just one final note on this series, and I know I bring it up every single year with the playoffs, mm-hmm. but I'm going to go back to it. 1998, Bulls-Pacers, Scottie Pippen goes on Mark Jackson just to completely ruin their offense, completely destroys them. Could you see a scenario wherein Giannis gets at least a couple possessions early on Kyrie?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that the Celtics are going to do whatever they can to get to avoid those matchups, but
right,
yeah, I think Giannis is going hunting.
I think so too, and I think this is going to be a couple of years ago I called Giannis the defensive minded version of Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're going to see this series.
Yeah, I'm excited. We saw Giannis as a monster all year. I mean, he's the MVP, one of the MVP favorites for a reason. I hope that he lives up to what he can bring to this series.
He seems ready for it. Like he's wired.
I agree.
For this one, I think.
I agree. Yeah. All right, let's flip to the Western Conference shortly. Again, we can't do a second round preview since we're recording this on Friday. Clippers Warriors game six is tonight. I didn't expect to be saying there was a game six at Clippers Warriors, Mort. Especially after seeing, you know, the Magic and the Nets kind of just rolled over and played dead. When you're down 3-1 in the series and you're going back on the road for game five, usually you get like a nice hearty 1-2-3 Cabo, and then that's it. The Clippers just refused to play dead. So what are you expecting? I still think it's safe to say the Warriors are going to win the series. And I love the Rockets went out to the Bay Area on Friday. Yeah, they're like, no disrespect to the Clippers, but we just want to get our bodies ready for Pacific time. Like, if there is a game one on Sunday, we want to be ready. But how worried should we be about the Warriors, even if they win this series, looking ahead to a potential Warriors-Rockets second round?
Not a whole lot. So here's the thing. A lot of people are bringing up the wrong narrative. They're talking about what's wrong with the Dubs, right?
Yeah.
This is about the Clippers and how they're spunky and frisky and they have no quit in them.
Yeah.
this is a testament to just how great they are right now and how in tune they are with one another, how they're fighting for each other. Like, this is team chemistry 101.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing considering the big midseason trade.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very, very much surprised at how quickly all those guys gelled. And it seems like there isn't really any ego on that team. Maybe it's because they have a bunch of youngsters and at least two rookies playing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're still feeling each other out and feeling the league out and whatever. But, I mean, they're just spunky. They're coming out of nowhere. They're making shots. They're unafraid. And I think coming into this series, there was no pressure.
Yeah.
Like, it's the Warriors. Like, they were expected to lose. And they were like, oh, okay. There's no pressure on us. We can just go out and play our game. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shai dropped 25. I know, you know, it was a loss, but still. Like, come on.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And Lou Williams has been a walking bucket all series. Montrezl Harrell has been equally... I mean, those guys off the bench have just been devastating. I think there's two things the Clippers have been doing. One, their bench, just because they're bringing Lou and Trez off the bench, they're exploiting one of the Warriors' big weaknesses, is that they're a very top-heavy team. So mm-hmm. that's caused problems, and the Clippers kind of got away from it a little bit toward the end of Game 5, and the announcers were even like, why are you posting up Danilo Gallinari, or like, why are you posting up Montrezl Harrell? Like, just run a pick and roll with Lou Williams every single time, and he's going to score. And then they did, and then they won. But yeah, I think it's more, with all due respect to the Clippers, who have showed no quit and like deserve all the credit in the world, that when we do a Bye Felicia for them, I'm going to have nothing but positive things to say about this franchise, because I think this series in particular, and I wrote about this at the B-Ball Writers earlier this week, this series like cements why they are arguably the top free agent destination this summer. Like, this is a great recruiting tape. We beat the Warriors twice at Oracle in the playoffs. We were the biggest first round underdog in 30 years. And we stretched this to a game six. We're the only one of two series to go to a game six. Like,
maybe game seven.
Yeah. Like that. They have a hell of a culture down there. So kudos to the Clippers. But it does feel like this is just the Warriors refusing to take them seriously, because after the game two route, or the game two, they're up 31, blew that, and had the historic comeback. Game three, they were just like, nope, it's over. We have no tolerance for this. And I think that's what we're going to see in game six too. I just think it's like the Warriors weren't taking this one seriously, and they expect, when you're up 31, you expect the other team to roll over and die, or you expect Doc Rivers to empty his bench. And to Doc Rivers' credit, he's like, no, whatever, we have nothing to lose. We'll just let our guys play. So
yeah, but needing two wake-up calls in the same series is not a great sign.
I know. So that's the question for for Warriors Rockets. Do you think there's any carryover effect? Like, I kind of think they weren't ever going to take the Clippers seriously, but I think they're definitely going to take the Rockets seriously.
Oh, of course. Look, they've seen all the narratives. Like, they've heard people, including, well, they've not, maybe not heard us, but they've heard people say that if Chris Paul played Game 7 last year, the Rockets would have won. You and I have talked about that. We believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're out to prove something against the Rockets specifically. Yeah. I mean, they have that series circled.
Yeah.
Now they just need to take care of business against LA and not look at it as just something that has to pass them by, because theoretically, having lost two games, now you have two additional games on your bodies.
Right.
That you really shouldn't have.
Right.
That's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Rockets did take care of business, so they're going to have a little bit of extra rest. And again, moving to Pacific time a couple days early, getting adjusted to that. So, super smart move from Daryl Morey and the Rockets.
Of course.
Befitting Daryl Morey and the Rockets. But yeah, I don't think we should necessarily take concerns about like the Clippers pushing them to a game six. I don't know that that says anything about an upcoming Warriors Rockets series, other than if the Warriors take the Rockets as lightly as they did the Clippers, which I don't think they will, then they're in some real trouble. But
mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, like the Western Conference Finals last year, plus James Harden averaging 36 this year, like they know the second round is really the Western Conference Finals again. Like, whoever makes it out of the other side of the bracket, they will have a much easier time against, I think, in the actual Western Conference Finals if they make it that far. But like, this is the one series between now and the finals that they will be in legit danger of losing.
Yep, I would agree.
So let's quickly hit Denver San Antonio. Spurs win game 6 at home despite a monster performance from Nikola Jokic. I'm not going to pretend I watched a single second of it. I was watching the NFL draft last night, so I have no real insight to provide. But I do want to ask you, who's taking game 7? It's in Denver.
I have the Nuggets, because Jokic was absolutely livid after the game. He was so upset. I can't tell if he was upset at himself or the team or whatnot, but he's going to come out swinging in game 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's no disrespect to San Antonio. They stepped up in game 6, and LaMarcus especially, like, they've gone to LaMarcus so early on in games, even from the 3, really, which I love to see.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just trying to space out the floor initially so they can get their inside game going. I like that very, very much. But the atmosphere in Denver, just I think they're ready to take this series.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's like, all due credit to the Spurs, who, I know this was a trendy upset pick. I picked the Spurs to win this series. And a lot of Nuggets people were outraged that, like, we're the number 2 seed. How are you disrespecting us? Like, this is what all the narratives going into this series have applied. Like, the Spurs have used their postseason experience. They had a big breakout from Derek White that one game. The Nuggets, like, Jamal Murray looked a little shook the first couple games. He's since kind of snapped out of that. Jokic, as you said, was a monster in game 6. It would not shock me at all if they go home. I mean, they won game 5 pretty resoundingly. I think both teams know, obviously, like, the stakes of a game 7. The Spurs have been there before, the Nuggets have not, so that will add some pressure. But yeah, I think the home court advantage swings it for the Nuggets. But if you're the Blazers now, and you're sitting there getting some rest ahead of your second round series, which of these teams would you prefer to face?
Oh, if I'm Portland, I'm rooting for San Antonio. No question.
Yeah, I agree.
No question. Yeah.
And again, with all due respect to the Spurs, but there are just more guys on the Nuggets I'm scared of if I'm...
Yeah, this is about matchups.
Yeah.
This is about, like, could you imagine how Nikola Jokic just could destroy and murder Enes Kanter?
I know. Yeah, if they had Jusuf Nurkic, it's a little different, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get Spurs fans will say, well, what about LaMarcus Aldridge?
Right.
With all due respect to LaMarcus Aldridge, he ain't Nikola Jokic.
Yeah. Well, it's just a different type of player.
Yeah. But Jokic is better.
Right.
He's more influential.
Right.
Like, he is more multifaceted. He can shoot from outside. He can give you 10 assists. He's a better rebounder. He can score from the post as well as LaMarcus. Like, he's a different beast.
Yeah.
And in literally everywhere on the court. So, and I don't think Portland would be able to necessarily survive that series, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I could see a world in which any of the 3 remaining teams, Denver, San Antonio, or Portland, makes it to the Western Conference Finals. But if you're running like 10,000 simulations of Denver, Portland, and San Antonio, Portland, I'm going to say Portland wins against the Spurs more than they do against the Nuggets.
Yeah, agreed.
So we will not have a second round preview for the West because I'm going to be out of town. So I apologize in advance, but we will be back early next week with some early takeaways from the second round. We're also going to have a bye Felicia for the 4 teams that have gotten knocked out so far. So the Nets, Magic, Jazz, and Thunder, the latter of which is going to be quite an interesting 15 minutes or so. So keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Take care, man.